time to tune in to the podcast with wise words, glasses on, ears open. Many things you learn from industry leaders and permobil experts. Welcome to the point of view of the wheelchair nerds. Extra, extra.
Be the hammer.
You're listening to something great.
I'm great.
You finally arrived at the place.
Welcome to Wheelchair Nerds, a podcast to connect and inform people who utilize, prescribe, and provide seating and wheel mobility equipment. I'm your host, Angie Kiger. Before we jump into today's topic, a brief reminder that the information in this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not intended to be medical, billing, or legal advice. Now, let's get to it.
Hey, Wheelchair Nerds, welcome back. Another episode here in season three. We were just chatting before we started recording with our guest today, Mark. And I have been talking about having Mark on the podcast for about a year now. I've known about Mark and all his things. He probably doesn't know this. We have many friends in the industry that know each other. Cole Sidner's a friend of mine, Charisma, you know, various people kind of in and out of the world of wheelchairs and whatnot. So really excited to have Mark join us today to not only tell you about just his life in general, but also, and Mark, I hope you don't take this offensively, but your really impactful side hustle. I think it's kind of fun. That's what the kids say today.
Thanks.
We'll chat about that because it's more than a side hustle. It's really changed a lot of folks' lives, that ability to access things. I first heard about Mark when I joined Permobil. I'd been with another company for a while. And Mark, you don't know this, but I heard about you because I heard about there was a guy who created something really cool for the speed control dial. And you were that guy, so super pumped to have you. But I've hyped you up enough. So Hawken, what was your first contact with Mark before we have Mark introduce himself?
Yeah, I was also at Rolette. I connected with them. We did a little just social video about abilities and the products he's designing and printing for those with various different quadriplegic, paraplegic individuals. And so discussed that. And then, you know, I've been following him. Incidentally enough, I saw Mark, I think, before with the Hyundai promotion that he did with Ann Leibovitz, who's a very incredible photographer. So that was kind of how I got introduced to Mark.
Very cool. Well, Mark, we've held people in suspense long enough. So give us that elevator pitch. When you first meet somebody, who are you? What do you do?
Nice. Well, thank you both for the generous introductions. So my name is Mark Fugelband. I broke my neck when I was 18 years old and became a C6 incomplete quadriplegic due to a diving accident. So I just graduated high school. So now I'm fast forward, I'm 47, almost 48. I've been in a chair for almost 30 years. I went back to school shortly after my injury to become an accountant. And it's not because I love math and numbers. It's just at the time it felt very safe for me and something that I like doing with my disability. I really wanted to be an architect, but in my first class, under even reasonable accommodations, I couldn't draw. I couldn't do what the class demanded, and that really turned me off. So I said, okay, I want to be successful. What does it look like? And so that's how I kind of got into accounting because I thought it was something I could do. But then fast forward to, I would say, when I got married in 2011, I started to think about, like, I want to create a company where I could do some advocacy, maybe do some designing for people with disabilities like myself, because getting disabled in 95, you know, the Americans with Disabilities Act had just come out, 5 years before 1990. Not a whole lot of, I mean, the internet was new. So it's not like I could just go on a website and find a product or buy a product or find out about a service. This was going to rehab. It was getting little things in the mail, like little catalogs or postcards that you could find out what products were available or talking to people that had a similar injury, those kind of resources. So for me, I spent a lot of time really thinking, okay, I want to be independent, but a lot of this stuff doesn't exist. How do I get to that solution and what does that look like? And so that was Velcro, magnets, zippers, a lot of sewing, just duct tape, you know, things to try and figure out how to be as independent as possible. Because I was in kind of a unique situation with my disability as a C6. You're not, you don't quite have triceps and you're not as independent as a para, but yet I'm not as high level as being in a power chair. So it's like I could kind of explore and try things and struggle. But that was kind of the fun part. You know, I was young enough. I didn't have kids or responsibilities other than to just really just go for it with the support of my family, which was great. And that was huge for me. Going all over the place, but fast forward to, you know, when I was married and starting this company, I started exploring the idea of developing products and spending money to hire engineers and trying to have them understand what was in my head. And that became very cost prohibitive. It was really expensive. One of the first things that I tried to do was to make a mat to go in a bathroom where whatever your chair was, however your chair was oriented, it would kind of lock in place so that way you could transfer on a toilet. That's something I was doing at the time. But it was scary if the floor was just recently soaked and I would slip off and the chair would move away, because you can't really break the chair to the floor. You can break your wheels, but you can't break your chair to the floor. So that was something I did. It was expensive. We had a child. I was like, all right, I'm going to shelf this for a while. And so it became more advocacy. Abilities was really, I'm going to go onto YouTube and just do some videos. But that was really hard to do and time consuming. So I focused more on the accounting. And then COVID happened and I was home with my kids. And this is kind of where I found 3D printing and just wanted to explore the idea of creating some of these ideas that I had about helping people, making my life easier, that would probably help others. Because I knew that it wasn't just about spinal cord injury. It wasn't about wheelchair. It was hand dexterity. And I knew ALS, MS, stroke, arthritis, so many people, especially aging, that were struggling doing daily tasks, which to me, I know make a huge impact. So anyway, I didn't want to get into too much detail, but that's kind of my deal of where I kind of came from with my injury and how I kind of got started with what I'm doing.
Super, it's super cool. We had never talked about like where we were. So kind of like how the trajectories of our life, right? So class of 1996 over here from high school. So,
nice. All right.
We're about the same age. We talk music and whatnot at another time. But, I think about when I was in undergrad, when I went to grad school. So my background was a recreation therapist. And then I had my master's in technology. So really thinking about where I went, and I remember I had a patient who was early 2000s, and I worked at a pediatric hospital. She was spinal cord injury, and I used to rig things up for her to make like her keyboard more accessible because, you know, small nonprofit hospital, I couldn't go to them all the time and say, I need to buy. You know, it was, how are we going to do this? So Angela used to call it, let's, you know, in our session today, can we make more inventions? And it sounds like, you know, you were doing that, right? You're early on in this. And I love the fact that you found 3D printing. I think that's phenomenal. But let's go back a little bit, because you said you first started the YouTube channel for advocacy. So tell us a little bit about, like, you know, you touched on what life was like at a high level post-injury, but what made you want to go into advocacy and really light that fire?
You know, I think for me, I had so much support early on, and I felt like that was such a huge part of my rehabilitation. You know, people are so focused a lot of times. Well, there's like a scale of there's someone who's very hopeless and someone who thinks they're going to walk in 2 days. And if you're somewhere in the middle where you can get a positive mindset and just look at little goals each day, if you can get to that place, you can be very successful. And a lot of it's just mental. You know, I would love to get a lot more, you know, movement back. But in reality, if you can wake up and just have this positive outlook on, okay, it just took me 20 minutes to get into my chair or whatever, or put on my underwear, but, you know, I'm going to go do this and see if I can make my day better or make myself better and just keep working. If you can stick with that, you can achieve so much. And I felt like that was my support system at an early age. It was my family, my friends, when I was just in a really bad place at a very low in my life, saying it's okay. And so for me, like, I felt I wanted to give that back, or at least share some of the things that I was dealing with, because I knew I'm in a really fortunate situation. I'm in Southern California. I have the support system. I have really good hospitals. I have, you know, durable medical equipment companies within miles from my house. But I also knew that there's probably somebody in the Midwest that maybe is only can only go out of their house a few months of the year because of weather, transportation issues. Maybe they're bedridden. Maybe they don't have family that can help them every day. I knew that there were people like this sitting there just holding on to something and wanting some hope. And for me, that was, oh, well, if I can show someone how I transfer, how I tie a tie in my lap, or how I pull up my pants, or how I hold a cup, you know, whatever it is, like that's going to help somebody. So I wanted to share that. And it was great. I mean, other than it being taking a lot of time and I just didn't have it, I really enjoyed the process. And I enjoy seeing other people do that too, sharing it, because it really is important. Visibility in the disability community is so important. And not just on YouTube or one of these social media outlets, but going out to a business, or, you know, going and eating in public, or attending a wedding, or, you know, riding public transportation. Like the average able-bodied person doesn't know what people with visible disabilities with mobility aids deal with. And I don't want to say it's all their fault. You know, like we have to go out and do these things, assuming we can, right? If we have transportation or don't have all these barriers, it's, to me, I feel like it's like a duty. You know, I want to go out and use the facilities and show people like, hey, I want to live. I want to make money. I want to buy things. I want to enjoy life. What does that look like? But also want to share it with others that maybe don't have those opportunities. And so just to create some hope for them as well, to get that, again, that mindset going, like, oh, maybe there's a possibility I could, you know, be independent or go back to school or drive again, or catheterization, do that on my own. You know, things like that that people take for granted that are vastly important, especially with one of these injuries.
I love that. It's giving back what you have, right, to those that don't. And, you know, that's kind of the impetus behind Abilities. Could you maybe tell our listeners who aren't as familiar with Abilities what Abilities is and kind of what your mission is and, you know, where you are now versus when you started?
Yeah, sure. So the company Abilities, we created it in 2013 and, again, started as advocacy, but really kind of transformed into creating products for individuals with hand dexterity challenges. And I like to say it as it's adaptive tools for people with all abilities, because I don't want it to just focus on, you know, spinal cord injury or, you know, wheelchair bound. But one of the things that I struggled with, and this is kind of paramount to what we do, is I want to create products that are affordable and they're aesthetically pleasing. You know, so much of the stuff, the complaints that I hear is, I can't afford it. I can't have it. Insurance won't cover it. And that's a problem. And the other thing is, especially people aging into a disability, there's a huge, like, say, learning curve, but acceptance curve of mobility aids. And I get it. I don't want a powder-coated silver walker with tennis balls on the bottom. I want something that is fire engine red and has maybe a cool seat and brakes and just something I'd be proud to use out in public, because acceptance of your disability is half the battle. It really is. I mean, you can have everything in the world going for you, but if you don't feel comfortable going out and saying, you know what, I have this disability, it is what it is, I want to live. I struggled with that for a long time. You know, I think in some ways I still do, because I have kids and I want them to be proud, and I can tell like if they're embarrassed or something. And so, I mean, that's a really hard thing to swallow. So for me, when I create stuff, I want it to be affordable, but I also want it to be something that someone's proud to use so they can go out and do those daily tasks. And so that's kind of what we tried to, I mean, when I say we, it's mostly me, but what I tried to do is make things that I would use in public that would help me just be more independent and enjoy life. So we started with something very basic. Like I created a little cap that went on a urinal because during COVID, I was like, I want to learn how to straight cath because these take up a lot less space. There's not as much waste. And I know that there's people that can only get this type of catheter. So I want to know, like, with my hand function, how can I do it the easiest way and make it into a toilet? So the first thing I realized is that it wouldn't reach. So I was like, all right, I'm going to get a urinal. I use that. And I was splashing it all over the place because the male catheter wasn't, it just wasn't staying in the the urinal. So I created this little cap that when you put it in and turn it, it just kind of locks that green tip, locks it in place. Very just simple, but just mm-hmm. something that made my life easier. Now I can go brush my teeth while my bladder was empty. I was like, that's kind of cool, right? Save me a few minutes. And that it's kind of where it started. It was like, what are the little problems that I deal with that I want to improve and maybe try and solve completely? But also being very much aware that not every injury is like me, the same, could be different. But maybe there's one person that might say, yeah, that might help me. So I wanted to share that. And it just started with that one product. And then by the time we launched the site in, gosh, has it almost been 3 years? I think it was 2022 on my, yeah, that was my anniversary date, the August 21st, 2022. Launched the store with 9 products. And that was the first time we went to the Phoenix Abilities Expo, which was really cool. That was like 2 weeks after that. And that was a lot of fun going to 110 degree weather and driving for 7 hours with all the stuff that I wanted to sell. That was an experience. But now today we have 25 products, and I've got so many things that I can't complete because people are emailing me and telling me, you know, this is something I struggle with. This is something I need help with. And I think that's awesome. I think it's really a blessing and an honor to have someone wanting me to help them solve a problem that would make their day better. That's why I love doing this. I would love it to be my full-time job. And I think we're kind of transitioning to that. Being an accountant pays the bills right now, but you know, as we grow, as I network and connect with companies and like-minded individuals, I feel like it's going to happen organically, that we're going to get to a place where I can hire people and really just do bigger and better things. That was always my plan. I wanted to build a company where I could hire other people that get excited about what I get excited about, which is really just to help people and make our disability, a physical disability, even invisible ones, more visible, more inclusive, just being out in the world. I just hate that there's so many people that just don't understand the simplest things with regard to disability, ADA. It just, that tells me we have a lot of work to do. And so I want to create products that help kind of bridge that and get people out to do the things that they want. You know, even just like going to dinner or going to the bathroom in a public restaurant and feeling comfortable doing that.
Awesome. I got a couple of questions about the store. So sure. I guess my first one would be, what would you say year over year sells the most? Like what's the most popular item that's available? People call it.
I would say I have a couple of dressing tools that we sell quite a few of, and that I think because they're versatile. So you don't have to use it for a specific article of clothing. It could be a bra. It could be for pulling up shorts, putting on your socks, or if you want to just tug at something, pull something off the ground, push it down to lock in caster wheels. You could use it for a lot of different things. But I think people like to try that because I think dressing is still a very hard thing to do. And losing that ability, even going to the bathroom, those are really important kind of daily tasks that you start your day with. And I think there's quite a few, even kids. I've had a lot of parents reach out, you know, because it's one of those things they want them to learn on their own. And it just kind of sets you up for the day. So, yeah, I would say the dressing tools have been really a lot of people buy those.
Okay, but one more before Hawken jumps back in. I have to say, sure. I'd like to ask, what has been the most surprising item that you have manufactured or created that has taken off and you're like, huh, didn't see that one coming?
That's a good question to think about that. I make a little, it's like a, how do I say this? It's a little clasp that goes over an iPhone cord that protects the cord and it allows you to push and pull it in. Sorry, my legs are shaking. and I thought it was a cool idea, but I didn't think people would like it as much as they do. And now that I think about it a little bit more and how it protects the cord and how expensive they are, see why even non disabled
people. Absolutely. I could tell you, I blow through iPhone cords like crazy because I pack, you know, to travel and I like constantly wrapping them up. And then, you know, you get to your location, like, oh, shoot. Because what happens is that little part breaks, and especially in your phone,
right. too.
You know, that's always been the thing, you know, not having a disability, but growing up with folks who have disabilities, and many of friends, not saying I can relate at all, but that's always been something that fascinates me. Is I remember seeing and learning about this somewhere back in the 90s when I was in college, that most of the stuff that, you know, a mainstream person gets stoked about, they're like, look how convenient this is. This is amazing. A lot of that stuff, you know, going back looking at history, was created to help someone with a disability first. And then once it comes onto the market, all of us people without disabilities, you know, buy it and are super pumped about it.
Yeah.
And the good news is it because it's mainstream, it drops the price down in a lot of cases. So that's been something, you know, we oftentimes on social media, various places with Purple Bills communication outlets, we'll have people reach out and say, hey, I created this thing. It's allowed me to effectively help my child get back into their crib, you know, or what have you. And we get really excited about that. And you may or may not have a reason to know this, but on our marketing team within Purple Bill and product management team, we're in about a third or maybe a half of us are therapists, right? And so we're like, the dorks in us are like, oh, it's amazing. We should totally do that. but when you talk, you know, of course, when we step back and we're like, what is operational for a global company, global manufacturer like Purple Bill? You know, how can we actually bring that to market? What will happen with the, you know, where is it going to be manufactured? All that kind of good stuff. Fortunately, we have to turn people down and say, you know, it's an awesome idea, but we can't do it. But I love the fact that you persevered through that, meaning you're like, hey, like, you know, the company might not buy it, but I'm still going to figure out a way to make it available. And recognizing that this might not be the right way to say this, but I'm thinking about like, you kind of checked your ego at the door, right? Like it might be the most phenomenal, best thing since sliced bread. You're like, this is amazing. But you're like, hey, like even if I only sell 500 of these, I'm helping 500 people. And no, I'm not going to be on Shark Tank and like be like the next Scrub Daddy.
But Scrub Daddy. Oh, what a win, huh?
Well, I mean, you never know. You might see you on Shark Tank soon.
No, I mean, that would be cool. But no, like Angie was saying, I mean, there's just so much cool technology out there, and it kills me if certain people can't use it or just exclude it for whatever reason. And hand dexterity or just the kind of, you know, being a quad, you know, there's some products we just can't use because they just don't have everything that would accommodate us. And that is something where I'm like, okay, is there anything I can do to kind of bridge the gap? And, you know, like the speed control dial, that was an easy one because it was like, all right, this is a really great way to bring quads into using the smart drive for the reason that I want to, like just to get up my ramp and my ramp van, because it's a little bit steep. And if I can't, I don't have strength that day, or I'm parked at an angle, I can't get up the ramp. And now I can't drive. You know, just to get up that ramp is worth having the smart drive for me. But with that dial, I can do it slow and controlled without using that watch and running into the wall like I've done 20 times. So for me, like making something that has more pronounced knobs, that's not very hard to do, but it just makes sense for others that can't grab it, right? So if it can't be manufactured on the Permobil side, that's okay. I'd rather just put it out there and show people that use it. And it's definitely not 500, but you know, even if it's 20 that are going to continue to use the smart drive and enjoy it, enjoy independence with a small little modification, then hey, that's what I'm trying to accomplish here. So
I think a lot of times people, it's being aware of what some of your gifts are, right? Your gifts in life are, and really thinking about, I mean, I'll have all sorts of things I'm like, ooh, I wish I could do, but I'm more creative on the writing side, the storytelling side. That's more my vibe. My one attempt to adapt something, and Hawken hasn't heard the story, but this is actually a true story, so I'll make this as short as possible. But my sister, who's 2 years older than me, she works at human resources. My brother's a pharmaceutical rep. That's important to the story. Then there's me, the youngest. My sister's daughter, her youngest daughter, we have congenital low muscle tone. We have no idea why that happens, but we do. And so Hannah was in preschool and she was struggling to sit up in her seat. She was like sliding down, sliding down. And the school that she was at was, they were very nice people, but they didn't have the funds to purchase her an adaptive chair. So I kid you not, my brother, sister, and I went to our parents' house for something, and we rigged up the craziest thing for her, but it worked. And like my sister and I were like, what can we cover this with? And so we went to a fabric store. We're looking, we're like, no, 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 she's preschool. Like we need some. So we ended up staple gunning a shower curtain to it because it could be wiped off. Like, ooh, then we need a seatbelt. And so like, you know, it took us forever, an exorbitant amount of money. And we did not, that was not our gifting in life. But it just really makes me think about, I love how people like you, accounting is what you've done to pay the bills, but you've also harnessed this gift that you have to see the world and figure out how can I make it more accessible, not only for me, but you know, hey, if it works for somebody else, let's get it out there for folks. And it was a very brave step, I would say, when you decided to open up your store and open it up to the masses to have people say, because it's going to work for some, it's not going to work for others.
Right. Yeah. No. Thank you. Yeah. Sorry, Hawkins.
Yeah, I obviously you've helped a lot of people, you know, with these products and trying to give back. And I know you're in contact with a lot of people with similar injuries and, you know, different abilities and such. Is there particular feedback that you've gotten that is really memorable for you or rewarding, just like kind of a story that really hit you?
There was a mother in particular that had a young daughter that, she had bought in some, I make two different drink holders, and her daughter was able to hold it and, you know, take a drink for the first time at a restaurant. And that was kind of cool. Like I get emails a lot, just people just saying nice things or saying, oh, I love this. It's helped me so much. Like that is fuel for me. Like I would love for this to become very profitable and so I can support my family. But at the end of the day, it's that human connection that I feel. It's so powerful. Like I love it. There was a lady that had ALS that bought, I made this little tool. It was a silly little tool, but you know, on doorknobs, so they have that little lock in the middle that it kind of comes out like, I don't know how to say this, but it kind of comes out like to a point and you have to turn it. It's tiny. Mm-hmm. A lot of the old doorknobs have them. Mm-hmm. And I just made like a little tool with that just to fit over it, almost like a socket and with a T handle. And she reached out. She's like, are you selling that? I have ALS. I can no longer, all my doors have these knobs. I really like to be able to get outside. So I sent it to her and she was just so grateful. And I was like, one, I don't know what it's like to have ALS. But at the same time, like the fact that this made her day a little bit better, wow, you know, like no amount of money can replace that. So those kind of things. But yeah, going back to your question, that one individual that reached out, because when I see kids that just, they shine, you know, they're dealing with something, you know, if they have a physical disability or even invisible, but they smile, they try to live and be happy. And when I see kids thrive like that, I want to try and make their life a little bit better. So when I hear something about a kid, it always gets me. Because you see them at the Abilities Expo and it's just like, wow, you know, it just blows me away. Just the strength and the resilience and some of these younger kids dealing with so much. So, but yeah, I love getting emails like that. It's just, it really fuels what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah,
so speaking of people, oh, sorry. Go ahead. I'll let you go. Then I have a couple questions about your kiddos too.
Sure.
Yeah, we'll get to the kiddos. But first, I want to know how someone with an accounting background got into engineering and 3D printing products like this, and how you did that.
Well, I would say that the math part came easy to me from my background. My dad's an engineer. He's actually a pretty incredible engineer. He's electrical engineer, but he does material science, and he does carbon capture right now. He's like a super nerd. He writes stuff on napkins that I'm just like, I don't know what you're talking about. But, so I think I got that from him, but both my parents graduated from Gonzaga in Spokane, and they're concert pianists. So they're very much creative, and that, and my mom's artsy as well. But I don't know. I've always been creative as a kid, just making things, and I loved that. But again, like I said, you know, when I got to a certain point where I had to decide about a career, I just thought like making money would be something that would be my contribution in life if I couldn't do something physically. Like I really kind of hung my head on that. You know, I thought I'll use my brain and make money that way. And accounting just seemed like a good fit. You know, engineering was, I actually started with that, but when I got to chemistry and I was like, nah, I don't want to deal with that stuff. It was just too much for me. I mean, I'm not going to say that I'm an engineer, maybe engineer type, but I know enough to be dangerous, but there's plenty of smarter people than me. I see something and I re-engineer it and I can draw it in CAD, but it's just more like I see the proof of concept in my head. I just want to get to the finish line. So if I can't, I'll bring in people that know more than me, but most of the time I can get pretty close. So it's just 20, you know, almost 30 years of struggling with God, everything to do with daily tasks. I have like a good idea with my mobility, like what might work. So I just go, okay, how do I put that into a product or a proof of concept so I can try it?
It's pretty sweet. So thinking about your boys, you know, you've mm-hmm. alluded to the fact you've got sons. How old are they is my first question. And my second question related to the store is it a family affair, right? Like, does your wife get involved? Do your kiddos, like, you know, want to help dad? Are they at the age where they're a help, or maybe they're at the age where they're a hindrance?
Yeah. Okay. So they're 9 and 12. They're almost 10 and 13. I would say that they were helpful earlier on, especially the 13-year-old. He's starting to be a little too cool. But, you know, I think they're more interested in the fact that there's some social media aspect because they're way into that now. I'm trying for them not to be too much into that. But when they see that, they kind of get excited about it a little bit. I would say my wife is helpful, but on the back end, she doesn't like to be in front of the camera. She doesn't want to. I mean, she'll help me with stuff, but I've pretty much kind of outsourced a lot of the work that I used to do that they would help me with to another quad down in San Diego, who's really good with fulfillment, and he's helped me a lot. So they are part of it, but my wife's more interested in being on the, you know, the financial marketing and the IP side when we get there. But
yeah, I was going to ask about that. I've got a couple of friends who are patent specialist attorneys and whatnot.
That's good.
Who does a whole other area of law to practice.
That's right.
Yeah, I live in the Denver area, so you can if you just, you know, step 2 feet, you run into an attorney of some type. So that's why I think I have a lot of attorneys friends, like IP people too.
Well, that's good. Yeah, it's pretty expensive. That was a lesson that I learned. I spent roughly $15,000 on a patent for one of my products, which is called a lug mug, which is it attaches to a mug and you can carry it with, you know, just your finger. And part of the reason why is that I had to go back and forth with the examiner, well, the lawyer did, because my product resembled a couple of other products, but it still had a completely different utility to it. So I don't know. In my mind, it wasn't the same, but there's all these nuances, and it was very expensive to get my lawyer to get that figured out so my claims could be approved. But at the end of the day, it's like, I'm not going to recoup that, I don't think. So do I really need to do a full-blown patent? No, you can go and do a provisional and spend $70 as a small business and get a 12 months of protection and then tack on another 18 for international if you want to. So you can get 30 months to make a product that you could say patent pending and pitch it to a company. And if it's great, then spend the money. But so that was an expensive lesson for me, but it's something I wanted to do anyway, so I could understand how the process works. It's definitely good to have that as part of your business if you make stuff that you're proud of.
It is. That's unique. It's a hard task, right? Like, I, there's a reason why those people get paid good money to do what they do. Those attorneys do.
Yeah.
Where can people, you talked about expanding the business, you've talked about doing more, and we've alluded to the name of the company, but where can people find you, whether it's in person, like, are you, you know, and obviously you do a fair amount of appearances, not like famous appearances, but do a lot of all these expensive stuff out west. I, of course, do the ones over on the east side because I'm in DC, but
right.
Where can people find you in person in the next few months, and then also online?
Okay, so I'll be at the Rolettes in July. I think that's the 9th to the 11th.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're doing Rolettes Experience Plus, which includes it's all genders. So I'm
fully expecting you and Hawken. I'll be there to take some video of you guys dancing. Because Hawken will be there. I'll be there. Fully expecting to pop in the next class and get some content.
Yeah, I'm planning to do it this year because I think it's great. I think it's long time coming that more men in chairs can talk about issues that they deal with. I, full transparency, like in January and February, I dealt with some mental health stuff that really, I don't know where it came from, but it just took it. I don't know if it was because of the wildfires happening and I felt like I had to stay inside and it reminded me of COVID, but it really was tough. And it was the community that I found on social media that really helped and embraced what I was going through. And I love that. So kind of going back to your original question, Instagram is probably the biggest place that I've been, even though I haven't been posting as much. Again, just so much happening right now, but that's probably the biggest place you'll find me. But other than Rolettes, I'm going to try to go to the Abilities Expo in Phoenix in September. But most of the local events here in SoCal, I will go to. I'll go to VA, Triumph events, different things that are popping up. But I would say the biggest one coming up is going to be Rolettes in July. But other than that, like, people can email me from Instagram. You can email me, Facebook as well. TikTok, I'm not as much, but I mean, I'm on there. But you can find me under Abilities. And just send me an email. I'm pretty good about responding. If it's a product related inquiry, it might take me a little bit longer, but if it's just, you want to say what's up and ask a question, I usually try to get back to people. So,
I kind of, you alluded to, some challenges you had earlier this year, and kind of related to that, I'm wondering, having been in a chair for, you said about 30 years, right?
Yeah.
And the ADA just having become a thing, what has changed to make things easier for you, and what still hasn't changed that needs to change?
Well, I think it's a double-edged sword, but I think social media has brought the world together, really, to talk about a lot of different issues. And, it's crazy how a big company could do something and then someone on social media could say or retag or post or do something, and then all of a sudden it's like everybody knows about it, right? So I mean, you can get your word out there, whether it's good or bad, but in terms of just understanding the bigger community and what the needs are, that's why I love where it's gone. Like, before, I struggled to find like-minded people to talk to others other than going to rehab, which is hard, right? You got to find transportation, and then you're going to go once a week if it's covered by insurance. And that was my outlet. That's who I talked to other than my mom and my dad. Now, I could talk to somebody in New Zealand if I wanted to. Be like, oh, well, a couple hours will be 8 a.m. there. I can go and reach out to, Mike from Adaptify. Or I could, there's people that you can connect with that it's amazing. And I love that. Because when I was dealing with what I was dealing with, I reached out to people that had talked about it before on social media. And I said, look, I'm struggling with this right now. I don't know where this came from. And they gave me such good advice. And so I love that. Whereas before, I think it's just because I was young and I was just like, it can't get any worse. And I'm just going out there doing my thing. And so it didn't bother me then. I didn't really know. I was just kind of going down a rabbit hole, so to speak. But now that I have kids, now that I'm married, and I've got my businesses and I'm aging with an SEI, like a lot of stuff just coming up and I'm thinking about it more. And I'm like, well, how's the next 10 years going to be? You know, what's that going to look like? But it's just it's definitely a cooler time to be disabled just with all the technology and the products and services. And I mean, it's just such cool stuff. I mean, I wish I had enough money because I know insurance doesn't cover half of it to buy all the toys that are out there. Because there's some really, really awesome things that I keep seeing. I'm like, oh, I wish I had that. So.
I have another, a little bit unrelated question to abilities. Sure. Because it's a clinician to me. When you say connection, that's big for me. That's the primary reason we started this podcast 3 years ago. Was because as a former clinical educator, former therapist that used to work in a facility, there wasn't enough connection, right? Like, I mean, I worked in pediatrics primarily. And so a lot of, in situations like that, the pediatric therapist literally comes in and tells the family what to do and, you know, off we go sort of vibe. But we do have a lot of clinicians that listen to this podcast because we try to make it so it's interesting to both parties, right? Because I'm all about uniting and connecting folks. So as you look at your 30 plus years of being in a wheelchair, what are some of the things that you wish wheelchair seating, like in particular, because I'm guessing if you're in SoCal, you probably go to, I don't know if you go to Rancho or, you know, one of those places for your wheelchairs over the years. But what do you wish somebody would have told young Mark, like when you're in rehab, versus what does more seasoned Mark, that's what I mean, we're the same age, so I like to say that we're not old Mark. But more seasoned with experience, Mark, of having wheelchair evaluations, what are things that you would tell those therapists?
I would say to be more mindful of the individual and how they, their body like works, their spasticity. You know, the way that I sit in my chair, the way that I push my chair, the way that I dress in my chair, those are all things that have changed due to how I've had my chair fit to me. You know, maximizing my push was probably my fourth or fifth chair. You know, being able to dress in my chair, which I'm very proud of, had to do with, you know, my, how high the foot plate was in the front and how much bucket I had in my seat, how close the wheels were to the side guard. So I didn't destroy my elbows every time I tried to lean on them to shift my weight. Just a lot of things. So I think it's important to know that to just listen and try to take that. I know that's hard to do, especially when you're trying to size a wheelchair. But, you know, seating, positioning, all those things are very important for success, you know, and feeling confident. My first two chairs, I didn't feel comfortable leaving my house because they just weren't, they didn't fit right. You know, they were too wide. The seat sling was so deep, it was digging into the back of my knee. Like, it's just... And because of that, I couldn't really function outside of the, once I was in the chair, I couldn't do a whole lot. And that was frustrating because really the chair is like a, it should be like a well-fit pair of shoes. It should really enhance what you're trying to do. And so you can go out there and now you're like, oh, okay, I can grab and reach and do all these things. And I mean, I remember once I got this quickie chair that had a shock in the back. And I remember, Mike Box, great guy, great, you know, wonderful inventor of chairs. And he knew how bad this design was because when he got up out of the chair, the brakes would move away from the tires because the spring brought the frame up. And also it was so narrow in the front that it was tippy. And so he comes in front of me at the Abilities Expo and he sees me sitting in this thing and he crumples up a piece of paper and throws it in front of me. He's like, I want you to pick that up. I was like, no way, dude. He knew I was going to fall because I didn't look comfortable. So, I mean, it's things like that. You know, having this piece of equipment, which a rigid chair that's custom is so important to my day. And now after so many years, I finally found something that feels comfortable and works for me. That takes time. It takes listening and communicating and kind of getting to understand the patient really well, which I don't know if there's enough time to do that, but it makes a huge difference because just numbers and sizes and measurements on a piece of paper don't always equate to what works well for the individual.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, it's it gets harder and harder. This is something that I remember when I talk to my friends with disabilities, they're always stunned to learn, but there are no, in an OT doctorate or a physical therapy doctorate, there is no requirements to take a full semester on wheelchair seating and mobility. Most of the time that they talk about how wheelchair companies will come in and do like a day of learning, like, hey, jump in the chair, try it. You know, it's like, off you go. And so, you know, a lot of it is learned over time. I remember when I used to do clinical education, I would always tell folks, I'm like, I mean this in the most appropriate way, but you have to speak to the client in a way that makes them feel comfortable. So that they can open up to you. It's a little bit like a first date, right? Like it's awkward, but then, you know, ideally you get to the second or third date in that 1 hour evaluation where you're laughing and joking about what you like to do on the weekends. Yeah. I would have people sit in my wheelchair evaluations and they would look at me like, your interview questions are unorthodox. I'm like, I'm not following the checklist that everyone says to follow, but I'm getting all the answers I need in order to make it so the client gets what they need. And that's for me, that's been all about human connection. I think that's bar none the most important thing. And so, you know, the flip side of that, and you know, Hawken gets to listen to this every day of his life now because he chose to work on my team. But I'm always telling end users, you know, until I'm blue in the face, like, please, please, please know you have a right to voice your opinion when it comes to your mobility device. Please speak up. And you know, I have been even more on that since last year of going to the roulettes and just story after story of people coming to us and saying, you know, this just isn't right for me. It isn't right for me. You know, it's like, you know, really empowering that. Unfortunately, our model in the US as far as like economy and whatnot doesn't, and I should say economy, I should say our healthcare system doesn't lend itself to that. But I'm a big proponent of always working with a therapist. My friends that have been in chairs for a number of years, I just close my eyes when I ask when the last time they saw a clinician was. One of my biggest crown jewels is the last time Chelsea needed a chair, which was over a year ago. And she reached out to me to say, hey, I need a chair. I need some help. Where should I go? I'm like, a clinic. When was the last time you saw a PT? And like, I was like, I'm not giving you any more advice until you go get your butt into a clinic. And she did. And she now is able to speak about how it's super important. So anyway, I digress, but I just think it's important to bring people together.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. It's a very sensitive kind of vulnerable topic, especially if someone's new to getting a chair or being disabled. Like it's not an easy thing. People do hold back the way they feel. So that's good.
Yeah. So just a couple of questions. We ask everyone to kind of close things out. Mention some toys out there that you wish you had. And kind of on that note, like what's one piece of complex rehab technology equipment that you think is underrated or misunderstood?
Okay. Probably going back to what I was talking about with a custom rigid wheelchair. I find it funny when people want to go on a website and buy a chair real quick. Like, oh, there's a used one on eBay or Sport Aid has this chair and I can just throw a few measurements in and get it. I mean, for me, I probably had like 12 chairs. Like it's so important to get the measurements right, but also get the right equipment, even if it costs money. And that's a whole nother thing, but you know, this is like your livelihood. I mean, for me, you know, I always freak out when I go to a restaurant and it's a nice thing that they ask, but they go, do you want to sit in the booth or do you want to stay in your chair? And I, in my mind, I'm like, God, I don't want my chair to go away. Like it's gotta be right next to me. I can't be out of it. It's true. Like it serves me in so many ways. And I think people don't really understand. I mean, those that are disabled do, but able-bodied people don't really understand like the importance of getting the right equipment and how it impacts the day for someone that needs it. Especially on that complex side where you have so much more involved, in the power chairs, which are so amazing now with what they do. I can see myself in one of those down the line, wanting all of those different attributes and bells and whistles. But for right now, like for me, this rigid wheelchair is it allows me to do so much with my kids and be independent. And any small change to that would throw me off. And so that's why I take every measurement and everything that I've taken so many years to figure out, you know, very carefully into heart, because it allows me to be me. So that's what I think is somewhat misunderstood out there in terms of the importance of it.
Kind of along those lines, talking about the wheelchair industry in general and kind of your interactions, what's, you know, in this whole process of getting a wheelchair, getting fitted and delivery, what's one thing you, if you had a magic wand, you'd like to fix?
I mean, the number one that sticks out, which, I mean, and I'll talk about a company that's doing some great things, but, you know, making it more affordable. You know, it's crazy to see what these costs or what the insurance gets billed, to have some things like, you know, you don't need all the nice things, but it would be nice to have an ultralight wheelchair and maybe have some nicer looking wheels and casters that have some shock absorption, but, and a nice cushion, right? Cause that's important. Mm-hmm. Not everybody is good about doing pressure releases every 30 minutes. I mean, you want a good cushion to protect yourself. Those things cost money and they're not always covered. So I would love for everybody to have access to that. Even in like developing countries that people are sitting around rolling in plastic chairs with wheels or wood wheelchairs. It's like, wow. Or not, or they don't even have a wheelchair. That's crazy to me. The other thing I would say is, you know, getting it covered by insurance, and then also being able to get it quick and also have it repaired quick if you need it. I mean, I have a company out here that's really great, but I've seen some horror stories with some of the bigger companies where someone will take access services, public transportation. They live in the middle of nowhere. They'll drive 3 hours. They'll get there and they got the date wrong, or, you know, the person's not there, or their part didn't come in and they got to go home and they have a broken whatever. I mean, that's, I can't imagine. Mm-hmm. If that's what you use to get around and you can't use it and you got to wait for months. I mean, that's horrible. So I wish that process could be improved dramatically, because that's very important.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, obviously you've kind of been in this world for a long time. Is there anyone in particular who inspires you to continue doing what you're doing?
Yeah, no, I mean, there, I would say on the technology side, the things that I get excited about, you know, I saw this company in person at the expo, and that's Bowhead, that's making some really cool stuff for chairs, very customizable and somewhat affordable, out of pocket, which is cool. But the biggest one that is new, I would say, is not a wheelchair. I'm so impressed with what they're doing. I think they're in Utah. I forget the gentleman's name, but producing a custom wheelchair for like $1,000 and getting it out to people within weeks. Wow. I mean, that's mind blowing. That's more in the realm of, I can afford this for a family member, or, you know, I could get them what they need, or I could get one. That's really, really cool. I mean, I know I was making fun of like measurements online, but if you know what your chair is and you kind of have those measurements, and I've gone on their website, it's pretty sophisticated. So, I mean, but also not overwhelming. It's almost like buying a Tesla. I mean, you can pretty pictures and drag and drop and stuff. But that really impresses me, because for me, the biggest hurdle in what I do and what others do is the price of things. People are on a fixed income. A lot of people with disabilities are on a fixed income. And I hate that question comes up a lot. Like, can you make it cheaper? Will you ever, you know, lower your price? And I'm like, yeah, I'm trying, but I've got my own limitations as it is. But yeah, that's a big struggle. So seeing companies like that come out with more affordable and, again, aesthetically pleasing, nice equipment. You know, it's not cheap stuff. It's nice. So those are kind of two companies that, as of recently, that I've been really excited about. Other than, you know, Triumph is great. Andrew and what he's doing for advocacy and others, you know, Chelsea with her foundation and just being visible, being disabled, and just crushing it. Like, that's awesome. That's very motivating for me and others.
Yeah, you kind of mentioned the affordability of things, and, you know, but if that wasn't an issue and we're thinking about just kind of improvements that you like to see in wheelchairs, like, you know, different features and design improvements that mm-hmm. you kind of wish would be more available?
Okay. I thought about this and I was like kind of all over the place, but so if we're talking about having power assist, because that's what I'm all about now, I want to be able to have that because my shoulders aren't what they used to be. I would love if there was an option to break the wheelchair as it's going downhill with power assist. A lot of the power assist wheels have that, but the rear assist options don't. And that makes it very hard for someone like me without destroying this part of my arm. So that would be really cool if they could come up with that. The other thing I would say is I would love for someone to come out with some really cool kind of hill climber brakes that aren't sticking up to where when I transfer it sticks right up in my butt. Mm-hmm. There was a way to take whatever 2 inches I went up my ramp and keep it there and I could rest. Like, wow, that would be huge. I see a couple companies that make them, but they're still not where they need to be. So there was a way to come out with that. I'd be very excited. And then one other thing, and it's not necessarily wheelchair, but seating, like an adjustable height shower chair or padded toilet seat that went up and down. Woo! Wow. Wouldn't that be exciting? Like, let's put that in every ADA room, even a height adjustable beds. Like, come on. These aren't like, you know, it's not like curing a disease. It just makes sense, right? Like getting in and out of a shower bench is kind of scary when it's slippery. And I wish I could go high to low or, you know, vice versa.
No, all great ideas. Maybe some people listening are going to take that back, innovate for this stuff. And then our final wheelchair question for our show, of course, is what makes you a wheelchair nerd?
I mean, I get excited about anything to do with a wheelchair. So, I mean, if you saw me at the show, like I went to Frog Legs and bought new caster wheels. I went to Not a Wheelchair and got new brakes. I ordered a new cushion. Like anything to do with my chair that makes my life better, I know about it or I'm going to buy it if I can, if it's affordable. Cause those are the kind of things that make my day better. I don't want to have to think about struggling to propel myself or to do little tasks. So having those things, like I have really bad clonus, my legs shake. And when I got these new wheels from Frog Legs, it by half, I would honestly can say by half, when I roll up those little tenji blocks, the little yellow bumps that when you go up a, they don't mm-hmm. shake anymore with those wheels. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, this is a big deal for me. So yeah. I'm always listening. I'm trying to, you know, whatever people are coming out with, I want to know, is it going to make my life better? And is it worth it? Is it not? If it's pretty, that's one thing. But if it actually improves my situation, then I'm all about it. So I would say that's what makes me a nerd. I spend quite a bit of time trying to figure out what's out there. And then also design around the cool mm-hmm. things that are out there and see if people can, you know, more people can use it or want to use it.
Absolutely. Love this conversation with you, Mark. There's other stuff we'll definitely have to take offline. You've sparked things, is making some mental notes to chit chat with you about. Sure. So I think it'll be the last of our audience hearing from you without teasing too much of some other things coming down the pike, we'll say, and just kind of leave it at that. But yeah, super stoked to work with you more and hear more about your story. So thanks for taking the time out to chat with us today.
For sure. Thank you, Angie. Thanks, Hawkins.
Yeah, thanks so much. This is great.
Thanks for checking out this episode. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single one. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Our handle is @wheelchairnerds. And tell your friends about our podcast too. Oh, and we really appreciate it if you'd give us a 5-star rating and leave a comment sharing what your favorite thing about Wheelchair Nerds is. Last but not least, if you have a topic you'd like us to discuss or know a great guest, hey, it could even be you. You could be that next great guest. Send us an email. Tell us why. You can reach us at wheelchairnerds@permobile.com or DM us on one of our social platforms. We love hearing from you. The wheelchair nerds, the wheelchair nerds, the wheelchair nerds. And I say it again.